effects of fracking, particularly the disposal of wastewater, which could form the basis of regulations on oil and gas drilling. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky has introduced a bill to halt the $1.5 billion in annual U.S. aid to Egypt, the first such legislation since the military's overthrow of the government. Several senators have urged the suspension of military and other funds for Egypt because of a U.S. law prohibiting foreign assistance after coups. But the Obama administration has defended the money as vital to U.S. national security interests. Paul says that the law is clear. When a coup takes place, foreign aid must stop. The bill's unlikely to pass, despite criticism of the military from some American lawmakers. Many believe Mohamed Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood-led government, ousted by the military, was taking Egypt down an increasingly undemocratic path. A prosecutor is telling jurors at the George Zimmerman trial that Zimmerman profiled 17-year-old Trayvon Martin, assuming he was up to no good, and that it led to the shooting death of the teenager. In closing arguments, prosecutor Bernie De La Uranda told jurors in Sanford, Florida, that a teenager is dead. He's dead through no fault of his own. He said Martin was killed because a man made assumptions and because those assumptions were wrong. He told the jury that Zimmerman wanted to be a police officer, and that's why he followed Martin through his neighborhood, even though the teen wasn't doing anything wrong. Closing arguments began after the judge ruled that jurors can consider the lesser charge of manslaughter in addition to second-degree murder. But she denied a prosecution request for the jury to also consider third-degree murder based on child abuse after a defense attorney called that proposal outrageous. Police and medics say at least 25 people were killed in bomb and gun attacks across Iraq late today. In Muqtadiyah, 11 people were killed when a...
American dream, pornographic magazines and war machines. You're the beaten and blind, just a loser's find. You're haunted, you're never wanted. Everlasting kiss, I'll never miss you. We're rolling red carpet for the elephant. Remember, I won't surrender.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
You know, what it reminded me of in some ways is I read this piece a couple of months ago, and I think it was in the New York Review of Books, and it was about Pakistan, and the guy was trying to draw a parallel between this kind of growth of like survivalist paranoia in America and like Glenn Beck and Alex Jones and all this stuff. And, you know, they're coming to get us and all this stuff. And then the fact that while that's, you know, paranoid delusion in many respects, what we are actually doing in Pakistan is we literally do have flying killer robots monitoring the skies of Pakistan that can kind of kill people at a moment's notice. And he was like, is there some way that like, there's a psychological projection inward of what's happening outward. And I think what's so interesting is like the violence that has been projected onto African Americans and to other groups, obviously, not just African Americans, Asian Americans, Latino Americans. And then the the raw racial fear that you see in people like at Fox News and all these other places. I mean, of course, some of it's just cynicism and racism and all this garbage, but there's also this genuine terror. And I think that that has to be connected with some with this projection, basically.
Oh, it's definitely. I mean,
and it's stunning the level of lack of self-awareness.
What we just listened to, basically, yeah. Both Cliff and Sarita. I mean, right. This is all connected.
Absolutely.
I mean, this Trayvon Martin case is not in a bubble.
No.
I mean, there's things that happened in our system, in our political system, that led to what happening. Whether it be why George Zimmerman followed Trayvon Martin, whether it be why George Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin, whether it be how the media covered this case, whether it be how people are cheering George Zimmerman getting away with it. It's and the list goes on. I mean, and that's just from this one case that got this attention, because once again, you could bring it back even further to George Zimmerman was not going to be charged with anything. He was let home that night. He said, all right. The police said, all right, you're free to go. There's nothing to see here.
They didn't even give him a toxicology report. And I just want to say, once again, this is the point. This is why, like, this case matters, not because, you know, look, again, fundamentally, I think that there's more to do. I think the Justice Department should look into this case. But as a legal matter and as a legal process, I have my feelings of it. I think the defense was absolutely ludicrous. I think a manslaughter charge was an obvious conviction on this case. But the real reason that we talk about it and we point to this is because this is a lens for everything else we've been talking about, which is the massive disproportionate effects of violence in American society, racial profiling policies, guns, ALEC, state legislature policies. So this is – if you take the proper lens through it, which I think we've hopefully done in this last hour, this is a profoundly important thing to look at because a lot of things are at stake here.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart aboriginals.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Stick with me. Keep your eyes on the radio. CNN informs us via Rachel Gentel that Trayvon called Rachel and said that he was being followed by a creepy-ass Kraken, which we have now learned that is a person acting like they are a police. who like a security guard. So then, here's Morgan, the ever-penetrating inquisitor, said, "So was there anything you wished you'd said when you were in there, meaning as a witness on the stand?"
Nigga.
Why?
People, the whole word I say is a racist word. Mind you, around 2000, that was not, they changed it around, I think. It starts spelling N-I-G-G-A. Nigga.
What does that mean to you, that way of spelling it? What does that word mean to you?
That means a male.
A black male?
No, any kind of male.
Black or white?
Black, any kind of Chinese could say nigga. That's my Chino nigga. They could say that.
This was between 9 and 10 p.m. last night on CNN. Who is in a quest to become the, again, most respected news organization in the country, perhaps even the world. So, nigga, with an A on the end. Well, I think I can now. Isn't that the point? Because it's not racist. That's the point. I could be talking about a male. I could be a Chinese male. Guy at the laundromat. I could be talking about a man. That's what she said it means.
Internet radio for smarter than original.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the fourth world from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian. Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the fourth world from aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous News, Thought and Analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neofascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earths, and love and solidarity to the entire original family at this time of strife and struggle. It's like every time I come to sit here, you know, Lupe and I come into the studio and we sit here and we try to do a show. And we say, yeah, well, you know, let's talk about this or let's talk about that. You know, now we already knew and figured actually by Monday morning, you know, this is Sunday as we're recording this for you. This is the 14th of July, 2013. And, as always, we have coffee, we take notes, we go back for 2 or 3 hours and then we come in and we do our thing. And, we thought that we'd be reporting on the verdict one way or the other on a Monday. And, you know, I'm going to be straight up with you. I'm not trying to grandstand or anything like that, but, you know, I already knew what was going to happen in terms of this verdict. I just didn't think that they were going to do it on a Saturday. You dig what I'm saying? I knew what was going to happen. You, conscious brother and sister, and cognizant Caucasian out there, you knew what was going to happen. You knew what was going to happen as soon as you heard the case go down. The fact that they didn't take him into custody, and then they supposedly did take him into custody. He wasn't bashed, and then, come on, man. You know that they jacked him up in that squad car. You know they jacked him up in the patrol car, the squad car, to give him some marks so that he could pass whatever exams that he needed to pass in order to do this. Because no matter what, because, you know, I got into it today. I'm not going to name him. Because I don't believe in calling people out, you know, necessarily, because I just don't see the point. But you can go on to my Twitter timeline, the Angry Indian, one word, at Twitter, and you'll see the conversations I get into. And you know, I mean, I try to be fair. I really, really do. You know, especially when people irritate me by calling me a liberal. Because, you know, the way white men, you know, I mean, Jacques Derrida was so clear about this. The European, you know, in my case, I'm looking at the Anglophone world, right? But he made this very clear. Now this is someone who was Jewish and born in Algeria, an Algerian Arab Jew, who said that when he first came to France to, you know, get his education, that, you know, they made it very clear to him that he was an Arab Jew. So Derrida was under no illusions about what type of world he was living in. And, you know, he talked about the undecidable, right? You know, there's a whole lot of, you know, mishigas that goes on about the debates, really, surrounding deconstruction. And usually I find that the majority of folks who not challenge deconstruction because it deserves to be challenged, that's what makes it a real philosophy, because it can stand up to the challenge. You know, it's not static. It's not a staid mold of analysis. It is a moving, breathing form of analysis that looks for the deeper meaning. Not just within text, but within design, within structures, within societies, within individuals. Now, having said all that, he made it clear that the European mindset is very different from a lot of other thought processes in the rest of the world. In terms of, and he's not the only person to say this, Europeans think in a very linear, straight, dichotomy fashion, right? It's either good or it's bad. It's either up or it's down. It's either black or it's white. You know, it's like, you know, the middle, it doesn't really seem to mean anything. And, you know, things are forced from one thing to the other. So as I was trying to tell this thick-headed conservative, you know, anybody who disagrees with them in the United States, you know, it's automatically labeled a liberal. Now, I don't know how many times I've goddamn said this in my writings, and I don't know how many times I've said this on my show, but it's very fucking clear that Republicans are fucking brain dead. You know, it's very clear that Republicans are stupid. Understand me. Republicans are stupid. I don't know how many times you say this to them. I'm not a liberal. Well, if you don't agree with me, you must be a liberal. And they accuse you of pulling up liberal sites, because every site that they don't like is a liberal site, right? Now, like I said, I've made it very, very clear in this show. You know, Phil Oakes laid out the formula for liberalism, and I don't see any reason to deviate from it. What, Lupe? What? I said it the last show? Yeah, no, I said it not too long ago. That, you know, liberals are left of center in good times, and right of center when an issue affects them personally. And that's the goddamn truth. Now, anybody who thinks that Obama is a liberal is an idiot. Especially with his bullshit statement after this whole Zimmerman trial. You know, he doesn't give a damn about black people. You know this, I know this. Now, you got a lot of suckers out here because, you know, they voted for him, and because he looks like them, they just assume that he's going to do something. And, you know, failing that, well, he can't do anything. You know, he's just the president of the United States, right? You know, I mean, his hands are tied. He can't do anything. He can't move. He can't make any decisions, you know, because the Republicans won't let him, right? Because, you know, white people won't let him. You know, he can't do anything, you know. Or, you know, he's totally not in control of anything. Well, see, as I'm talking about, you know, this thick-headed conservative, and like I said, I'm not going to name him. Go look in the timeline and look at the nonsense. He was justifying the Zimmerman verdict. And it went from that. And like I said, you know, I give conservatives a chance. You know, Lupe's husband accuses me of being like Tom Hartman, you know, trying to reason with these fools, and it's pointless. You know, I'm starting to use the block button more, and I don't really like to do that because I'm really about dialogue, and I really think that if you can talk to some of these suckers, you know, they'll straighten out a little bit. And it turns out that that's not the truth. You know, I'm wrong there. You know, I'm wrong there. It is impossible to reason with someone that goddamn close-minded, which is just about everybody in the GOP, which is just about every fucking libertarian. You know, because this is one of the things he says. He came up with some libertarian something that's supposed to separate him from the other libertarians, right? You know, and I've said this before, and I know it's redundant, but, you know, some of you, this is your first time here, so I'm going to say it again. Libertarians are full of shite, okay? They smoke pot. They follow astrology. They have gay friends. You know, they want all of the financial benefits of, you know, the conservative platform, but they don't want to, you know, hold up to any of the moral nonsense. Well, not that the hardcore Republicans who talk the moral nonsense live up to it either. I mean, Pat Robertson, for one goddamn example, from the 700 Club, he's an exploiter. Be it religion, be it diamonds in Africa, be it that, you know, bank account that he supposedly has in Scotland. Oh, you don't know about that? Well, I really think you need to read Greg Palast, you know, on that. You know, the best democracy money can buy, it's worth reading. It's worth reading. You know, you'll learn all kinds of things about the Walmart company, their former lawyer. Right, you know, all kinds of malfeasance. You'll hear things about Dr. Dre that, you know, you probably didn't know, and how he was working, you know, for the record companies against Napster, and, you know, it really didn't have anything to do about money for him because he was getting paid anyway. So yeah, Greg Palast. You know, I mean, if you're not reading Greg Palast, then you're an African living in the United States. Yeah, you know, I don't know what's wrong with you anyway, for the simple fact that he's an American reporter working out of the UK because he can't actually write in the United States because they don't want news in the United States. They want propaganda here. You know, they want advert space. They're not looking for actual news. Journalism in the United States? What is that? You know, after the Boston event and John King said, well, somebody's going to get the story right because nobody really knows what's happening, but let's just keep reporting that a brown guy is the problem. Turns out to be two white guys, but let's continue to talk about, you know, a brown guy, you know, but it turned out to be two white guys. And even with that story, it's not straight. You know, what happened to that boy now that's paralyzed? From what I understand, it didn't go down the way that they said it. Matter of fact, it didn't go down the way they portrayed it on live TV. So, hey. And, you know, was it Dorner, Michael Dorner? Nobody's even talking about him anymore. Nobody even remembers that, right? You already forgot about that, right? Troy Davis, anybody remember that name? Oscar Grant, anybody remember that name? Sean Bell. How about Ayanna Jones? How about Derek Jones? How about Romali Graham? Any of these names ring familiar? And I know I'm forgetting somebody, and I apologize. I know there's a whole lot of people out there, but, you know, it's like, what's to do? Okay, so you got protests going on all over the country, and for the most part, they're peaceful on the part of the protesters. Because we're getting different reports around here, and supposedly somebody's burning an American flag somewhere. And, you know, I don't know. You know, what am I to say about that? That's a certain level of anger that I haven't seen since they were protesting Vietnam. And I'm old enough to remember. I watched those goddamn protests. And when people are doing things like that, I mean, that's, you know, what are they saying there? They're saying that, you know, they thought that they were about one thing, and it turns out, no, my country's really about something else. You know, that's really what that means. You know, and like I was telling this thick-headed conservative, or trying to reason with this thick-headed conservative who wants to pull up every Uncle Tom. You know, anybody that mentions Thomas Sowell to me and then wants to talk about him being a great American. I mean, what's to say about that? You know, Thomas Sowell wakes up every day angry he's not white. See, that's the one thing I can say about E.J. Jackson or E.W. Jackson, whatever the hell you call him. Yo, what's his name? E something. I don't give a... I really don't give a damn what his name is. That Uncle Tom that's out here making videos for the Tea Party. You know who I'm talking about. You know, see, he's different from Thomas Sowell. See, Thomas Sowell wakes up every day. Thomas Sowell wakes up every morning wishing for a reversal of the Watermelon Man. You dig what I'm saying? E.W., E.J., whatever the fuck his name is, Jackson, he's different. He doesn't mind being black. He wants to be a slave. He wants to be a slave. He wants to be a black man enslaved to white people. But even then, I really need to correct myself. He wants to be a slave under the thumb of white folks as long as he's boss nigga. Right? Let's just be serious. You know, Alan West, Alan Keyes, Dr. Ben Carson, right? You know, all of these intellectual Negroes, you know, house Negroes that they like to bring up. It's all the same thing with them. You know, Bobby Jindal, Nikki Haley, it's all the same for them. You know, they wake up every fucking day of their lives. Every day. Angry with, you know, whatever God they believe in. Which is usually the white man's version of the Palestinian deity, of the Palestinian carpenter, that they're not white. They feel cheated. And, you know, where am I coming from with this? Well, hey, I used to be an Uncle Tom, too. But see, I wasn't Uncle Tom like these motherfuckers, though. I was an assimilationist. You know, I mean, like I said, you know, as mixed as I am, you know, I just want everybody to fucking get along. You know what I'm saying? What other model did I have other than the African community in which I grew up, right? And the white society which enveloped us. So, you know, I had no reason not to assume, looking at photos of Dr. King, that eventually I would grow up and wear a suit and tie like him and go and earn some green for my family. Right? No one told me that niggas are not supposed to have dreams like that. That you're only supposed to go but so motherfucking far. That the idea that you can have the same shit that white people have in their motherfucking society, the society that they have forced you to become a part of. Alright? No African chose to motherfucking come here under the yoke of Europeans. Now, there were Africans here beforehand. And we can make an argument about that, but today is not the day for that. Dr. Ivan van Sertima, the late Dr. Ivan van Sertima, look it up. Before Columbus, all right? Just look it up. Jan Carew, another one. Look it up. You know, you don't have to believe me. You don't have to listen to me. Look it up. And then you come to your own conclusions about, yeah, and look at the Olmec culture, and you come to your own conclusions about that. Right? And I'm not making an Afrocentric argument. I'm making a historical argument. Because that's what it is. I mean, if I really wanted to be nasty, I could ask you, what the hell were white people doing at the same time that the Olmec were in Mexico? Matter of fact, what was the European doing during Al-Andalus? When the Chinese were creating books, printed books, what was the European doing? Enslaving each other, you know, the North came down, right? Western Europe, right? Eastern Europe. Taking people back to Central Asia to sell them off, right? I mean, come on, man. You know, anybody who thinks that Europe is some sort of homogenous, one Europe, one people, one race, one blood entity, you're living in a real serious goddamn delusion. You don't realize it, but you're insane. And I'm saying that you're insane, you know, if you're really believing this, even though all the goddamn evidence is to the contrary. Europe was just a bunch of feuding tribes. And how many goddamn invasions? You know, where did the Angles and shit come from, right? You know, where did the Saxons come from? What happened when the Northmen came down? You know, no one wants to discuss this. You know, let's just pretend that the what happened after the Reconquista is Europe, before and after. You know, let's not talk about the fact that Arabs have recorded, Aristotle and what have you. And until they started, you know, really pressing against the Arab world, they didn't even have that knowledge. You know, that's how they got it back. I swear, conservatives in the United States and in the UK and in Australia live in a mass of muddled confusion. And it's really painful to see. It's difficult to deal with. And frankly, I'm out of patience. I'm really out of patience trying to reason with white folks who know better about the society that they maintain. Well, I didn't do anything. No, you just maintain it. And you're holding me responsible for shit that I didn't goddamn do, but that's fair, right? I mean, you know, if you go on Twitter, because, you know, Facebook is, I don't know, who gives a fuck Facebook, right? You know, if you go on Twitter, people are making some excellent goddamn points. At least on my timeline. I don't know who you follow, but, you know, the people I follow are pretty goddamn intelligent. And people are making some serious and, you know, knowledgeable goddamn comments about this. And now I understand that there's protests going on all over the country and all over the world in some places. Still waiting for confirmation on that, though. Haven't really gotten anything firm on that. Because the verdict just came out yesterday. They slipped it in on Saturday. You dig what I'm saying? So they give people time to, you know, get upset and you know, vent on Sunday so that Monday, motherfuckers can go back to work and pretend that none of this shit ever happened, right? Because don't worry, you know, Obama's going to go to work on Monday and pretend that none of this ever goddamn happened. And see, and that's something else we're going to talk about when I come back, because somebody accused me of being a homophobe and, you know, that's a whole lot of bullshit, because we're going to talk about that. You know, I mean, after everything that's been said to me by the RGB crew and, you know, some of you hardcore practicing Muslims and motherfucking cultural nationalists out there, when somebody calls me a goddamn homophobe because I disagree with him on the idea that this Trayvon Martin case and homophobia are exactly the same. No, wrong. Sorry. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're going to take a break so stations may identify themselves. You hang out for a little bit, and we'll be back. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginal.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that prevents pregnancy. It is not an abortion pill and does not cause an abortion, only the prevention of pregnancy. If you have had unprotected sex or have been raped and need Plan B, contact your local Indian Health Service. You have a legal right to receive Plan B over the counter, meaning without a prescription or a doctor's appointment if you are 17 or older. Plan B must be taken within 72 hours of sexual intercourse to be effective. For more information, call 605-487-7072. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
This is Commander B, and you're locked onto www.BantuRadio.com, locally and internationally. www.BantuRadio.com, the voice of the voiceless.
Would you like to hear the lie that judges tell jurors every day?
Listen up. This matters. I'm Lewis Black, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute with ACLU attorney Bill Newman.
In a criminal case, the judge instructs the jury, you decide the facts. But you jurors must apply to those facts the law as I explain it. And if the prosecution has proven the defendant's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, then you must return a verdict of guilty. The problem with this instruction? It's not true. It's not true at all. And the judge well knows that. But most jurors don't. Jury nullification, the right of jurors to say no, to just say no to a prosecution, was central to the Bill of Rights. Indeed, Thomas Jefferson famously believed that jurors' right to nullify was central to democracy. Writing in the Champion magazine recently, criminal defense attorney Patrick Barone cautions that care must be taken when considering nullification because juries can use that authority to enhance and augment the power of the elite rather than to limit it. But, Barone continues, jury nullification can and should be a critical limitation on legislatures bent on promulgating and judges bent on enforcing ever more overreaching criminal laws. The take-home lesson here, criminal juries should know of their right to nullify because that power can constitute liberty's last defense.
The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the American Civil Liberties Union because freedom can't defend itself.
This is Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge and tortured, used illegal weapons and targeted civilians. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable. You know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It shouldn't be supported. You know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Go ahead, ready?
I'm Forrest Whitaker for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and this is my daughter, True.
Hi.
Life is full of choices, and many years ago, I chose to become a vegetarian, and it's one of the best choices I've ever made. And since True's dad was a vegetarian, she decided to be vegetarian, too. You may decide to go vegetarian for better health, for a better environment, or you could be like True and I and just decide you don't want to eat meat anymore.
I love animals and I love being a vegetarian.
I'm Forrest Whitaker.
And I'm True Whitaker.
And we're vegetarians.
For more information, visit PETA.org.
This is FSNN reporter MJ Del Valle in Tbilisi, Georgia. Free Speech Radio News has been an essential outlet for my stories from the Caucasus region, including in-depth looks at the recent Armenian presidential election, the creative ways protesters in Azerbaijan are using to fight for freedom of expression and labor struggles in the Republic of Georgia. But FSRN, along with the voices of people struggling for dignity, equality, and human rights, could be silenced. Find out how can you support independent grassroots journalists at FSRN.org.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
We are the Ku Klux Klan! We hate niggers, we hate Jews, we hate faggots, and we hate specs! We people need to get off your ass and wake up! This is America!
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is Kristen Hirsch from Throwing Muses, and you're listening to a podcast released under a Creative Commons license.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
Internet Radio for Smart
Aboriginals. Okay, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I'm your host, Angry Indian, sitting in with our engineer and executive producer, Guadalupe Morales. This is the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, broadcasting to the international Aboriginal community from occupied North America. Subscribe to our international podcast by way of our RSS feed at feedburner.com/Aboriginal Press Radio. And we are carried by an ever-widening network of independent information providers not financially hamstrung by the corporatist news model. For more information on the news items and opinions discussed in this internet radio broadcast, please visit our electronic newspapers, aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com, aboriginalpress.wordpress.com, and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. You may also leave us a polite voicemail at Aboriginal Media Group via Google Talk, and you can always email our studios at aboriginalradio@lavabit.com, and you can always find us at Aboriginal News Group via Skype. Now, I welcome back my brothers and sisters of the Fourth World, our non-Aboriginal ideological comrades, and the negative elements staunchly opposed to human justice and social harmony. But in spite of all that, they take the time to listen to this show on the sly anyway. Well, in fact, they're listening to everybody any goddamn way on the sly. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The homophobia bit. Now, the reason I'm touchy about this is because there really seems to be a fucking problem that the gay community and the gay lobby have. And I'm separating the two because it's not exactly the same. And this is something I keep trying to explain to the RGB crowd in the African community. That, you know, the gay lobby, gay people, it's not exactly the same thing. That's like saying that Oprah represents you and what you're doing here, you know, which is obviously a falsehood. You know, anyone who says that is only making that kind of a judgment based on a misconception that because, well, this group is black and this group is black, they automatically have the same interests. That's not always necessarily true. You know, I don't know how many times I've pointed this out. It's redundant to me, but I can't think of a better, quick analysis. You know, no one really thinks about the fact that more than 90%, I mean, it was like 96 to 98%. Of the South African police force was African, indigenous Africans. So they were white officers, but I mean, who was doing all the grunt work? Who was out there beating the hell out of people? You know, who was going into townships and whipping people? They were whipping people. They were cutting people's skin open, man. You know, these were black people doing this to black people because a white man told them to. And of course, for white people, they look at this as being normal. You know, they accept it. They accept it. You know, they get upset with black people when they get angry about it. So this is the same mindset. So, you know, for those of you who are out here defending Obama as he remains silent in the middle of this, especially now that there's protests all over the goddamn place, the fact that he remains silent, but he called the, what is his name? Lupe. I can't hear you. What was it? Jason Collins or whatever his name was. The brother who came out in the NBA. He called him, didn't he? Didn't he get on the phone and call that motherfucker, right? Now, you know, I'm happy he came out. I'm happy he's able to, you know, live his goddamn life. I think it's cool that his homeboys on the NBA are all right with him and they're being supportive. I know there's some fans out there who are a bunch of Neanderthals, but, you know, what the fuck can be done? You know, you're dealing with a lot of wankers out here. You know, and you're going to run into these fools. You're going to run into these fools. They don't know the first goddamn thing about being gay, but they're out here, you know, condemning people, right? So, you know, he came out. I'm happy for him. I support the brother. The entire African community in the sports world, I would hope, would support the brother in living his life honestly. But at the same goddamn time, why are you calling him over that? And then you have Trayvon Martin's mother. What about her? What about Sean Bell's widow, for that matter? What about Oscar Grant's widow? And I know some of you suckers out here want to tell me, oh, well, they weren't married. Fuck you. I'm saying on behalf of these sisters, fuck you. She had a child with that man. They were getting married. They had their shit together. He was a good one, if you want to look at it that way. Fuck you. Same thing with the way that Trayvon Martin's girl was treated on the goddamn stand. You got white people and a lot of black goddamn conservatives that have nothing but venom for that woman. On her behalf. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're a bunch of goddamn punks. Fuck you. Alright, you gonna talk like that about that woman after what she was listening to her man being fucking removed from the planet. Fuck you. You're a bunch of sick sons of bitches. Fuck you. That's my fucking attitude about this. Fuck you. You've never been to a goddamn funeral, obviously. Watching an entire fucking family just completely break down because somebody was killed by a police officer. Because somebody black died. Because there's some shit that is going on in this country called racism. Or stop and frisk. Or racial fucking profiling. Or just pure white goddamn hate. Or in this case, a Latino who wanted to be white so goddamn bad, so motherfucking much, that he was willing to go to this goddamn degree. I don't give a fuck who the fuck it is. He was told to stand down, and he didn't. Because he wanted to be another fucking wannabe goddamn cop out here who fucking took shit too fucking far, and they covered his ass as much as they goddamn could. His daddy is a goddamn judge. Alright, his mother is a Latina living in motherfucking denial. So, you know, this is what the fuck is going on. And now his brother's out here talking about, well, you know, my brother's life is in danger. Man, get fucking real. Get fucking real. Matter of fact, have you heard this? It's been reported he has the right to get his the weapon back. The same weapon he used on Trayvon Martin, he actually has the right now to get it back because, well, he was acquitted. He has the right to get that back. You want to talk about fucking irony? This is America, right? This is the America that you suckers who are out there voting for Obama. You know, this is the America that this is what you got. This is what you wanted. You wanted to be assimilated, right? You wanted to be assimilated into a racist system. So hey, you know, you're getting what the fuck you want. You're so goddamn assimilated. You're so motherfucking assimilated that you can't understand that the person that you put into office, that you went out there and mashed the concrete for to get this man in office, that he's not doing a fucking thing for you. We had a guest on here, Chris Williams, who wrote an excellent goddamn piece that got into the Huffington Post just before this verdict came down, titled America Owes African Americans More. And, you know, it was shortened to the point. And we had him on the show. And he made an excellent goddamn analysis when we were talking about the differences, one of the major differences for African people that should have been paying attention to when it comes to between Bush and Obama. Bush did more for Africa than Obama has. You know, it's like, how embarrassing is that? And, you know, you can't tell these Oprah Negroes. You can't tell these Tom Joyner types. You can't tell the Steve Harveys out here that, you know, Obama's doing, you know, anything, you know, half-assed. You know, they don't want to hear it. He's doing a damn good job. Well, you know, like I said before, yeah, I mean, if I was having a champagne and a blunt with my goddamn croissant, I mean, I wouldn't think that the world was wrong either. By the poolside, I wouldn't think that the world was wrong either. You see, everybody I mentioned and everybody I can mention, they don't have to worry about paying their motherfucking rent next month, right? Not unless they make some bad fucking investments or some shit. You know, they don't have to worry about it. Jay-Z is set. He and Beyonce don't have to worry about a motherfucking thing. So why should he be worried about you? He ain't doing nothing for you. Have they made a statement about this? Or are they going to wait till next week to make a motherfucking statement about this? You see what I'm saying? You know, it's like bullshit. So, you know, back to the homophobia thing. You know, I really get tired of that. And, you know, that's where white folks at. And that's the delusion that, or my view on the delusions that a lot of Africans in the United States and the UK and Australia and New Zealand have, all right? You know, Canada, I don't know. Some of you brothers in Canada are just a lost motherfucking cause, man. You know, I mean, I don't know what to think. I don't. You know, I'm saying this with all due respect, man. But, you know, y'all on notice. Really, man. Y'all on notice, man. You know, you're slipping up there. You're not really paying attention to what the fuck is going on, man. You know, I'm saying this with all due respect and love, man, in my heart, man. Your brothers in Canada is on notice, man. Toronto, you know, BC, you better get your shit together, right? The tide is high, all right? The tide is high. You better get your shit together, man. Because what happens in the lower 48 happens in Ottawa. You understand? So, you know, you better wake up and find out what the hell is happening. You see, the First Nations are not laying down there. They sit idle no motherfucking more. right? I mean, you know, Op Thunderbird, I guess, isn't out there like it used to be, but Idol, no motherfucking more. You know, so don't wait till the last goddamn minute before you realize that the ovens are hot. I mean, you know, what the hell is going on? So again, back to the homophobia thing. And, you know, excuse me for the tangents, but please, roll with me on this, because it's all coming somewhere. It's coming to a point. All right? This cat, again, I'm not going to name him. Look at the timeline. I'm a hypocrite because, you know, I don't see what the difference is. And it's like, wait a goddamn minute. I understand that, you know, this is a problem for you. I've written about this. I talk about it. I've gotten into confrontations with people about it. Right? They're calling people faggots and threatening to bash them with it. And I'm like, no, you're not. You know? No, you're not. You're not going to do any goddamn thing. So, you know, don't accuse me of that bullshit. But just like the, you know, the thick-headed conservative I was dealing with earlier today, you know, and this particular person, you know, the gay lobby has to understand something. Your issues are important. But, you know, you got your goddamn issues, and the racism within the fucking mainstream gay community is as thick as what? It's as thick as what? You can smell it. You can taste it. You have to bathe when you leave it. Right? You know, it is what the fuck it is. You've had, you know, the AIDS crisis out here for how goddamn long? How long did it take these gay health, like what, gay men's health crisis? How long did it take them before they actually started serving people of color? You know, Larry Kramer wrote a hell of a lot about this. He's talked about this. When did they start serving people of color? When did they even acknowledge people of goddamn color? And to this day, you will still have a hard time getting white gay males in the United States and Canada to even acknowledge that, you know, African gay men, you know, Latino gay men, well, Latino. I hate that goddamn term, Latino. Can we stop using, I'm sorry, Lupe, can we stop using that goddamn term, Latino? What the fuck? Latin, you know, Latinum doesn't exist any goddamn more. You know, what is it with this bullshit about Spain? You know, Spain, you know, makes it very clear. They don't want anything to do with Indians in the Americas. Unless they own you. You know, they don't even respect the mestizo. So it's like, you know, why do you want to hang on to this? You know, there's so many Indians I know. They want to talk to me about, well, you know, the name of Ricardo goes back a long time. Like, oh, yeah, it really, I mean, like, you're like, what? You know, 4 feet, 8 inches tall. You know, you're going to tell me that you have. You're a direct descendant of the Castellanos. It's like, come on, man. That's a goddamn pipe dream. That's a goddamn ridiculous colonialist pipe dream. You know, I know black folks right now. I mean, you know, don't hang on to that one European ancestor that they can point to. I mean, with so much fucking pride. And then it's like, when you really learn the family story, it's like, why do you even want to acknowledge this motherfucker? Gee, yeah, you know, I mean, Malcolm X called it, man. White fucking disease, man. You know, you just can't get this idea. You can't do a thing without the white man. You can't move without him. You can't move your bowels. You can't breathe. You can't make a decision. It's like, fuck, man. You know, and especially for you brothers to want to be all goddamn macho and standing on the corner with your fucking surplus, you know, up-to-date motherfucking camouflage, because, you know, you got to be up-to-date, right, with, you know, your opposition. You know, you got to have their gear, right? So, you know, talk in Africa, but, you know, dress in American and shit. And, you know, just standing around, you know, grabbing your joint, swinging it around. How tough you are, how hard you are, you know, how many women you've had. You know, all of this kind of bullshit. Treating women badly, you know, punking out motherfuckers who can't defend themselves. You know, beating on gay folks and shit, calling motherfuckers names, you know, gay this, gay goddamn that. All of you motherfucking hypocrites, you know what I'm saying? And I challenge motherfuckers on this. So when somebody comes around with some shit about, well, you know, you're a homophobe, you don't like gay people. Hey, man, you know what? Fuck you too. Fuck you too. Because one, that's a goddamn lie. And second, it's a fucking failure of the goddamn imagination. You know, for somebody to say, hey, you know what? There's an issue out here that really needs to be dealt with right now. You know, from what I can see, the gay marriage thing is moving. But it's not moving because America has changed, right? It's moving because David Axelrod was on Meet the Fucking Press and said, yeah, well, the gay lobby's giving us so goddamn money, we answer their phone calls. See, first off, there is no black American lobby. There's the Black Congressional Caucus, and they go where the fucking wind blows. They go within, they go in the direction that the wind blows. They make no independent motherfucking decision. Yeah, at least not since the fucking 70s. Well, actually, you can say that the Congressional Black Caucus really hasn't been any goddamn thing since they didn't support Shirley Chisholm. So how the fuck is that? How's that for apples, okay? I remember that. I remember when Ron Dellums and the rest of them just totally left that woman swinging in the wind. You know, because they wanted to, and I'm not saying that, you know, George McGovern was a bad cat, man. George McGovern was a good cat, man. You know, recently passed, you know, he was a good cat. But the thing about it is, Shirley Chisholm would actually had answered the fucking, you know, questions about the issues that mattered to people. Not just women, not just black folks. She was talking about natives. She was talking about Asians. She was talking about the disabled. She was talking about the elderly and what have you. And she was talking about stopping war. So, you know, the Congressional Black Caucus said, well, if I got, you know, a check coming to me from some goddamn company, I can't have somebody like that up there, especially if they represent the Congressional Black Caucus. So, no, no, they didn't support her. So that tells you right there where the, CBC is at. It is what it is. It is what it is. And, you know, I said what I said on Twitter, and I stand by that. If Trayvon Martin was a white male who was gay, not only would his mother have gotten a phone call, but there would have been real heat come down on that entire situation, and Zimmerman would have been charged, you know, if not immediately, within a couple of days. You know, there would have been some action on it. There would have been some movement. But no, you know, Obama's statement, when his patent statement, when something involves African people, is let the courts decide. You know, I got nothing to say about it. But when, you know, gay folks have issues, well, he can make a video. He and Hillary Clinton can make videos. They can make phone calls. They can go out there and make statements, right? They can mention it during press conferences. And, you know, it's obvious that after he said something, after his talented 10th homeboy, Skip Gates, was unceremoniously arrested in his own motherfucking house by a police officer that falsified the motherfucking police report, because the person that called, that made the 911 call, didn't say a goddamn thing about the race of anybody. She said two males looked like they were trying to break into a fucking house. Now, you gotta remember now, this is Skip Gates, who admits that he walks over to the police station when he moves into a new community to basically announce himself and to say that if you see me, don't freak out. I live here. And I'm also a professor at, you know, a big time university. And I'm not one of these bad niggas that you really need to worry about. I'm one of the good niggas, right? So, you know, I have no respect for him. Haven't had respect for him for quite some time. You know, and he's useless as a intellectual mind for black folks. Unless you're one of the black folks that really, 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 really goddamn wants to be in the house. I mean, we're talking about somebody who takes pride in the fact that he's mixed. Okay, you're mixed. So goddamn what? You know, to take pride in you know, the slave blood? What is that? excuse me. Well, I'll tell you what that is. That's the mark of a motherfucking Uncle Tom. And that's why, you know, that Uncle Tom shit, we need to be clear. There's Uncle Tom's and there's assimilationists. And now I'll cop on to that. I've been an assimilationist. I probably might still want to say I'm an assimilationist. I mean, the majority of the fucking people I deal with are white. Everywhere in my social world, for the most part, you're looking at anywhere from 70 to 90% fucking white folks, right? I'm married to a Christian Palestinian and shit. Live in a, you know, fairly, you know what, white goddamn area of a major fucking city. You know, it's like, what the fuck? I can't get any more goddamn colonially gentrified than I motherfucking am, unless I was the only brown spot in the buttermilk some fucking face by myself a priori. I don't know what the fuck else, you know, I could possibly do. But see, I still have to hear from white people, well, you know, you don't like white folks. You know, fuck you, man. You know, oh, you don't like gay people. Fuck you too. You know, I mean, that's a whole lot of bullshit. Because I'm calling you on the fucking hypocrisies and contradictions within what the hell you're politically pushing to me. I hate you. But you can sit here and justify the Zimmerman fucking verdict and tell me that that's not fucking hate. You know, this perpetuation of 500 years of goddamn xenophobic, pro-European fucking racism in North America, that's not hate. But because I'm saying, why don't you fucking check your goddamn society so I'm being hateful? See, you know, that's why I can't stand conservatives. I don't give a fuck if they're political conservatives or even conservatives in the gay lobby that make the argument that really everything should fucking stop because you're gay. You know, I've made this very clear in my own goddamn writings. Look around. Some of this shit is still fucking available. You know, where I'm talking about homophobia and I'm pointing out. If you want to, you know, for you straight people that can't stand gay folks for whatever goddamn reason, mostly because I think you're in the motherfucking closet. And if you stop fucking with the hangers, you might actually enjoy life a little fucking bit. That, you know, everything that we read about, because the majority of the people that talk shit about gay life don't know a fucking thing about goddamn gay life. They don't know any gay people. They know nothing about it. The isolation, social and political isolation of gay people led to the bathhouses. It led to risky behavior. And for gay people to get upset about hearing that shit, kiss my goddamn ass, right? Because you are the same motherfuckers that will point this shit out with black people in terms of prostitution, in terms of drug use, in terms of recidivism, in terms of the justice system and what have you. And it's just supposed to be okay because you're talking about niggas, right? But once you start talking about, you know, the gay mainstream, which of course is not brown, because I don't want to say yellow. That's a whole lot of bullshit. Nobody's really fucking yellow. You know, this brown in Asia. You dig what I'm saying? You know, because it's not brown, overwhelmingly brown, then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it's an insult to white people and it's an insult to the entire gay community. And that's a whole lot of bullshit. That's a whole lot of bullshit. See, that is a gay political motherfucking argument. That's not a gay argument in terms of people just trying to live their fucking lives in some kind of dignity. Now, I will always make the motherfucking argument. I don't give a fuck about this gay marriage shit, because it really is, you know, fucking ridiculous. It's a civil goddamn thing. If you want to go to a church, then go to a motherfucking church and get your shit. But he's still going to say, by the state of wherever the fuck you live, by the power invested in me by such and such and such, I now pronounce you man and wife. So, you know, I don't even want to hear that bullshit. It's the fucking civil bullshit. It's a law. You don't motherfucking like it, then change the fucking rules. But see, then if you do that and you add some religious bullshit to it, well, now you got a theology. And that's a whole lot of nonsense, because in this country, you're supposed to have separation of church and fucking state. I know the Republicans don't believe in that. And libertarians like that, thick-headed conservative I was talking to, who couldn't figure out where the fuck he was at because he didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. And I really hate it when conservatives claim that they read the manifesto when they didn't. Or that they read Capital 1, 2, and 3 when they didn't. Or the working man, the lecture to the Working Man's Association when they didn't. Or even worse, when they talk about Adam Smith when they never read any of Adam Smith's shit. Or Ricardo, or Malthus, right? They've read none of it. And then they throw up John Stuart Mill, you know, because it's just a name they picked up out of a fucking hat. They never read any of that shit. They wouldn't even understand it. Especially if it was in King's English, they wouldn't fucking understand it. You know, I'm serious about this, man. You know, it's like fucking, you know, stop coming to me with this bullshit. You know, if you listen to this and still want to fuck around on Twitter, you know, it's like, you know, stop coming to me with this bullshit and expecting me to, you know, at some point agree with you. You're fucking wrong. You know, come with some goddamn facts. You know, it's like the thick-headed conservative. Oh, well, you bring up as a liberal site. Well, the liberal site's the only ones doing any goddamn reportage. World Nut Daily isn't doing any fucking reportage. They're just printing opinion. Any of these goddamn conservative sites. Fox News, they're not even giving opinion. They're just fucking giving out lies. They're not reporting any fucking truth. You know, I mean, this is somebody who's still, you know, this thick-headed conservative who believes that the Benghazi goddamn scandal, which isn't a scandal, he thinks there's some validity to this shit. It's already been discredited. And look at the IRS scandal. They were going after liberal and progressive groups just as much as they were looking at the Tea Party groups. In fact, they actually looked at the fucking left-wing shit more. So what the fuck? There is no goddamn scandal. There's no fucking scandal. The scandal that's not being looked at, even after John Boehner had admitted that this was a whole lot of bullshit, is the fucking sequester. because they got enough money to give Israel, and they got enough money to continue this bullshit in Iraq and Afghanistan, all this privatized nonsense, right? They got enough money for that. They got enough money for all this surveillance. But they're broke when it comes to dealing with the needs of people and fixing bridges and fixing roads and other infrastructure, right? So, you know, if you can't understand that, and if you're, you know, one of these political, you know, white, scared, punk-ass conservatives and shit who, you know, thinks the NRA is out here doing what? Bringing Jesus back. You know, nothing I say and no reality is going to convince you of anything because you're lost. You're confused. And, you know, you really need to have a cup of tea, sit down, and really look at your fucking life, right? And for the gay lobby, you know, same thing with y'all. Yeah, I'm really done with you politically. You know, I think the majority of you politically are hypocrites. And I'm not talking about gay people. I'm talking about the political gay lobby. You know, I think the majority of you are a bunch of motherfucking hypocrites. Because you speak up only when this shit really, you know, matters to you, which really makes you no different than any motherfucking buddy else. You know, and yeah, I understand you got fucking problems out here. And I also understand that, you know, CC McDonald was only being supported by a few people. Not the entire goddamn gay lobby. Is she? Matter of fact, how many gay people really are out there for fucking Bradley Manning? Yeah, that's what I thought. So, you know, I don't want to hear it. Not interested in your bullshit, you know. I mean, you know, it's hard not, nah, Lupe, it's hard not to get an attitude, man. You know, because motherfuckers, when they come up to me, man, especially online, or anywhere for that matter, they think they're talking to a green motherfucker. I've been doing this shit for fucking more than two goddamn decades. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't want to hear this bullshit. Especially after a verdict like this. It's like, you know, what are you trying to do? Who the fuck are you trying to convince? You're not trying to convince me of any motherfucking thing. You must be trying to convince yourself that you're right. You know, like I said, you know, this dickheaded conservative is accusing me of trolling, but the whole thing started because he was trolling other people all goddamn day long. And then they turned the fucking argument around when it doesn't work. Anytime you come up to them with facts, I don't care the fuck what it is, you know, a bigoted white man, a homophobic black man, a Asian that, you know, doesn't question the system, you know, a Latino who just doesn't give a fuck anymore because he just thinks that, you know, everybody hates him, so he doesn't care about himself anymore. You know, my Indian brothers who, you know, every day they have to ask themselves, is there a reason for me to get the fuck up out of bed in the morning if I even have a motherfucking bed? I'm saying to everybody, and this is why I give these conservative clowns a chance, when, you know, sometimes when I'm online, you know, if they're not too motherfucking insulting. Because once the insults start, I'm done with you. We all need some motherfucking clarity. We all need some motherfucking clarity, man. You know, this cannot continue to go on. Where, you know, people are fucking fighting amongst each other. And, you know, you got all this goddamn police brutality. And you got all these motherfucking, you know, black people in government who are just sitting around doing nothing. But, you know, if somebody said something about Israel, they'll turn it into an entire Judeophobic event. And they'll condemn this son of a bitch. And, you know, he's a motherfucker. And, you know, what the Jews have gone through. And this, that, and the other. And totally ignore, the, you know, what happened to Rom people. What happened to Turks. What happened to, well, fuck. How many goddamn homosexuals were rounded up by the Nazis? Who even discusses that? Who wants to discuss that? How many gay people fucking discuss that? You know? Or the fact that it wasn't until, what, 2000, 2002, that the German government even acknowledged that gay victims of the Holocaust even existed. So, no. No. You know, I don't have time for suckers, bigots, homophobes, you know, folks that can't see past their own goddamn nose. Can't see past the ass, you know. I'm not interested. You know, you really, no. I'm just not. You know, I mean, like I said, when we came in here, I didn't know. We just didn't know what to say. And you know, the protests are out there. I got no real confirmation on anything yet, other than MSNBC something about non-lethal ammunition being used by police. Who the fuck knows? I'm not out there. I don't know. Go check it out. Go check it out for yourself. Just be smart. You know, anybody who's telling you to do something stupid out there. Hey, if you're in these marches, man, in support of Trayvon Martin, I don't give a damn, you know, how they try to, as much, they're going to try to provoke you, right? And, you know, seriously, the best thing you can do is just keep your head together. You know, you can listen to these, you know, these loud mouths out here. You know, the majority of them are probably agent provocateurs who are probably paid to go out there and get people riled up. So use your head out here, all right? Tomorrow's Monday, a new day, another chance to figure something out, to do something that actually makes sense and will take us somewhere. And I'm not going to sit here and say, okay, well, you know, let's be positive. No, let's be realistic. The black man's head, and woman's head for that matter, is on the chopping block. As I said, the tide is high, so it's time to wake up. You know, the water is knee high. What are we going to do? You going to stand there, or are you going to try to navigate your situation? I think if you have enough common sense and enough self-respect, you will make the right choice. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. If you want the man to get the fuck up off your back, brother and sister, all the hell you've got to do is stand up. Sigit. Power to the people.
Not only for Indians, but he was also for blacks and other minorities. And they have done a lot on the problems in Palestine and also the problems of blacks. And so I recommend that you listen to him.
Assassination of Malcolm changed the paradigm of debate in this country, as did the assassination of King. And I just want to, seeing that all of the brothers and sisters up here have touched on the vital parts of the assassination, I want to say that, in my view, one of the most significant things about the assassination of Malcolm, and some of the speakers here touched on it, was that it changed the paradigm of public debate in the African community. No longer in the African community was there a leftist or nationalist or pro-black position that can be argued around those issues that affected our lives. The whole debate moved to the right. And I want to read something to you briefly by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Giroux. And he wrote that what is missing in the current debates dominating politics today is the recognition that the real issues at stake
are not the debt ceiling or the state of the economy, however important these things are, but a powerful and poisonous form of authoritarianism that poses a threat to the very idea of democracy and the institutions, public values, informative cultures, and public spheres that nourish it. In the United States, and you know, I've pointed this out time and time again, in the United States, the debates around the issues that affect our lives are debates that have been formulated and manufactured by the establishment, by the powers that be. The parameters of the debates have been established by the establishment and the powers that be. So that when you debate an issue or talk about an issue outside of the parameters of the accepted wisdom, you are labeled insane, crazy, radical, dangerous, violent. But when you discuss reform of a system that requires abolishment, you know, we need a new abolitionist movement in America. We don't need a reform movement. We need an abolitionist movement. And when we talk about reform, we're talking about recreating and reinventing the same mechanisms of oppression in new guises. You know, I call Obama the political antichrist. I have told many of my comrades and brothers and sisters that Barack Obama is the slickest thing that white supremacy could do since the Emancipation Proclamation. And the reason why I say this, and Jared pointed this out when he talked about the absolute dichotomy between what Malcolm stood for and what Obama is about and what he stands for. And I want to draw this out just for 1 second. I want to talk about assassination as a modification of dissent. Assassination as a strategy of modifying public debate, modifying the political paradigm. And when we look at the assassinations that were the most significant in the 60s, the assassination of Dr. King, the assassination of Malcolm X, even the assassination of Robert Kennedy, when we look at these assassinations, they all had what effect? Of changing the locus of the debate that was moving towards revolutionary consciousness, revolutionary understanding, an anti-war movement that was beginning to become anti-imperialist generally. Now, we need to understand something. Both Malcolm and Martin were assassinated when they attached the African diaspora situation here in America with the wars of the United States abroad, with U.S. foreign policy, with U.S. involvement and support of colonialism. One of Malcolm's major speeches was how Patrice Lumumba was assassinated. He talked about the plot to kill Patrice Lumumba. He talked about Vietnam. He talked about why the Bandung Conference was necessary. He talked about black nationalism. Malcolm said that he was an advocate of black nationalism, and he broke down what he meant by black nationalism. To Malcolm's view, black nationalism was black people controlling the lives, economy, and all of the different aspects of their community. Now, in order to be a black nationalist under those context, in that context, in a society in which you were supposedly citizens, means that there was a paradigm of political disempowerment, of dispossession, that accrued to black people that didn't apply to any other people in this country. And that politics and that historical reality was dispossession. African people in this country were brought here as slaves, and they have suffered a policy of dispossession. We have no inheritance of wealth to pass on because we have no wealth. We were never paid for the hundreds of years of labor, so we have no wealth. We have no property. All the property was taken after the Civil War during the Reconstruction. So what do we have? We have the ambivalence of being second-class citizens. And Malcolm asked you, what is a second-class citizen but a first-class slave? So we need to understand that Malcolm began to break down the paradigm of black oppression in this country as a form of domestic colonialism, as a unique form of domestic colonialism, that the black communities existed within a society that had as its founding ideology white supremacy. And that ideology of white supremacy had undergone changes over the years since Reconstruction, but it still remained fundamentally the same. And Malcolm said, what's the difference between a Dixiecrat and a Democrat? And then what's the difference between a Republican and a Democrat? They both are dogs. One's a wolf and one's a fox. So Malcolm broke down that the condition of African people in this country requires independent thinking, independent political organization, and understanding of colonialism and imperialism. This is what Malcolm talked about. Martin Luther King, on the other hand, who came from the institution of the black church, who was brought up in the mainstream of black bourgeois culture, black middle-class institutions, whose father and grandfather were preachers right here, right in Atlanta. He had access to all of the institutions of the black elite. And he took a moral position on the human rights and the civil rights of African people in this country. And you got to remember, when Martin first started out, his own class and his own people were against him. He had to write a letter from a Birmingham jail to his fellow clergymen and said, if not now, when are we going to protest about this? After he got the Nobel Peace Prize, he said that the United States government, how can he talk about violence in the ghetto when his own government was the greatest purveyor of violence in the world? The minute that Martin Luther King started talking about the same things that Malcolm X talked about, they both were assassinated. Robert Kennedy, a white boy, gunned down when it became apparent that he would have won the presidency if he would have got the nomination. And why is that important? Why was his brother assassinated? Why was his brother assassinated? We have a little island 90 miles off the coast of Florida, Cuba. And Cuba has been under embargo ever since the Bay of Pigs and ever since the so-called Cuban crisis. Cuba has been under embargo since the late 1950s. Just remember that. An embargo is an act of war. Cuba has been surrounded and embargoed by the United States. And it was embargoed by the United States because the CIA made a miscalculation about Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution and could not swallow that miscalculation. That miscalculation led to the impasse that we have today in Cuba. And the CIA and the Dulles brothers and the architects of the Cold War hated John F. Kennedy for going up against them and not carrying out their policies. And they destroyed him. Now, there's plenty of conspiracy theories of whether the mafia killed him, whether the CIA killed him, whether the KGB killed him. It's all irrelevant. We're talking about assassination in America as a means of moving the public debate to the right. And in every case where the assassination took place, the public debate moved inexorably to the right. This is very important to understand because the consolidation of right-wing power in this country is manifested today. And it's manifested in the choice of Barack Obama for president by U.S. Finance Capital. Barack Obama was picked to be the president of this country when he was at Harvard Law School by the freedmen capitalist faction of the U.S. ruling elite. And for those of you who don't know the Chicago Freedmen School of Law, School of Economics, it's about finance capital being democracy. So today we live in a society that has the facade of a democracy, but has the marriage of the corporate elite and the state. And any marriage between corporations and the state is called fascism. So we're living in a society, a unique society, that's democratically fascist. This is a democratically fascist state. And that Obama has carried out, has brought into fruition laws and statutes that you and I would have never permitted if it was George Bush. The fact that he has brought these prohibitive and repressive laws into existence, expanded the U.S. torture program, expanded the U.S. black sites, carried out drone attacks, have moved the world into a whole new level of impersonal warfare. You know, when you don't come home in body bags, when Johnny doesn't come home in body bags, it's pretty easy to go to war. When you know your son is not is sitting up in the office somewhere playing video games and killing people 5,000 miles away, that's easy war. But the point is that the president of the United States today is perceived by people of African ancestry, the victims of the counterintelligence program, the targets of repression and right-wing consolidation in this country for the last 50 years. For over 50 years, this country has consolidated right-wing power under the military, the police, and corporate finance capital. And the first movement that emerged to protest this after the economic decline and breakdown in this country was the Occupy Wall Street movement. And what did they talk about? That capitalism was the enemy. That they were 1%, that the 1% controlled the society, and they were the 99%. Where was their mortgages going? Where were the jobs? Where was the infrastructure? Where was the health care? Where was the schools? What was this economy and this country about? We bailed out Wall Street. We bailed out the auto industry. We bailed everybody out, but when it came to ordinary poor people, there's no bail money out here. There's no bail. All during the political campaigns, they talked about the middle class. Nobody mentioned the word P-O-O-R, poor. That's you and me. Middle class. Who's the middle class in America? Who's the middle class under modern finance capitalism? So the assassination of Malcolm X was very important, because now whenever we debate police brutality, stop and frisk, racial profiling, no one talks about these contradictions of racism in the context of black nationalism. No one talks about it in the context of a radical analysis from the left. All of the analysis is from the middle to the right. There is no left in America. There is no progressive movement anymore. The unions have been demoralized, they have been disorganized, and they have been beaten down. And the rise of the corporations is clear, because a corporation has more rights, more civil rights, and more legal rights than you do. Corporations are considered an individual. They're considered a person, a corporation. Well, if they're considered a person, how come none of them ever go to jail whenever they commit crime? Nobody's in jail out of the 2.5 million that came from corporations. There's over 20 million people in this country that have felony convictions and are out of jail with felony convictions. So what we're looking at when we look at the assassination of Malcolm and the assassination of Dr. King, as we look at the modification of the politics of this country by murder. By murder. Malcolm X has been more effective dead than he was alive. When the brother just talked about it, when he last saw him, he got out of a taxi by himself. He was getting out of a cab, coming into it by himself. In the last days, Malcolm was by himself. All these people today that quote him and that say they love Malcolm X, when he was alive, the man was by himself. And this is very important to understand, because in order for them to destroy Malcolm, they had to isolate him. In order for them to destroy Malcolm, they had to vilify him. And his means of vilification was to use the very organization that he had joined and that had opened up his eyes and moved him forward, the Nation of Islam. And when we look at the counterintelligence program, we have to understand that those organizations that were left standing after the 1960s are the same organizations that you have today that stood idly by while they created the prison industrial complex. You got to remember, 2.5 million people didn't go to jail in the last 20 years, and nobody was on the watch. Jesse was a national leader. Reverend Al was a national leader. Minister Farrakhan was a national leader. They created the prison industrial complex on their watch. Did they talk about prisons? Did they talk about the massive incarcerations of black youth? Did they talk about political prisoners? Did they talk about the political repression? Hell no. They were calling for more cops. Remember when they were talking about hip-hop being violent? They were calling for cops in the community. When crack epidemics hit the streets, who were the radicals that were talking about the police and the government was distributing drugs in the black community? The Black Panther Party talked about the government's involvement in drug distribution and heroin distribution ever since World War II. And it was put off as a radical rhetoric. And how many essays, how many journalistic stories have come down the line in the last 20 years to show that the U.S. government was involved in massively in drug distribution in the black community? We have the Les Payne's the heroin trail. We have the other one about crack cocaine and the Contras. All of these exposés show that the U.S. government was heavily involved in the drug trafficking. But when the left said these things, they were marginalized. But it was true. Whenever the left says things today, it's marginalized. I'm going to speak up at Skidmore College in a couple of days. And the students up there are fighting each other over me speaking. One group says that I'm going to shame the college. These are black students, by the way. That I have a background, you know, I come from the Black Panther Party and BLA, I'm violent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and he's not really the type of speaker for Black History Month. Another group said, but he's the perfect speaker for Black History Month. Read his paper on New Age imperialism and the dilemma of Pan-African consciousness, which is I'm delivering up a skid. But they don't want to hear it because I'm critical of U.S. policy and Obama. Okay? I'm critical of the fact that here we are in the 21st century. We are in the 21st century in a historical moment in American empire, and we are asleep at the wheel. Totally asleep at the wheel. Black folks think Obama's going to be president for the rest of his life. The laws that he passed that allows the president to assassinate American citizens domestically and foreign and on foreign territory is going to go out with him. The Patriot Act and the addendums that come to it are going to go out with him. Guantanamo is going to go out with him. There's not one promise that he made about these things that he's kept. He talked about withdrawal from Iraq. They was coming out of Iraq before he went there because they got their ass ran out of Iraq. Everything that they tried to do in Iraq to monopolize the oil industry in Iraq failed. So my point is that assassinations of our leaders at this particular juncture in time, in 64, in 67, these assassinations came at a time when the consciousness of people were rising to the point where this consciousness was becoming revolutionary. This consciousness was becoming, in many cases in the black community, nationalist. Black folks was burning down entire cities and leaving black stores untouched. That's nationalist. Black people were talking about black power, wearing afros and giving all kinds of signs, and the military was concerned about black soldiers sending weapons home to the Black Panther Party. The United States government was frantic, and they had a war in Vietnam that they couldn't win. And on top of that, students in Europe were going on strike in solidarity with workers. The whole of the Western civilization was in an uproar in the 1960s. And early 70s. And the way they dealt with that upsurge of popular resistance was through assassination. Through imprisonment of political prisoners, through assassination of our most vocal leaders. We must understand that Malcolm X was one of the most articulate spokespersons of black nationalism in his day. He could win an argument based on black nationalist ideology. Now, you know that that's unprecedented because Because you don't have one black nationalist that comes on Al Sharpton's show on MSNBC. There are no experts in Pan-Africanism invited anywhere. What is an expert on Pan-Africanism? What is Pan-Africanism? Ask the average black person, average person out there in the streets, do you know what Pan-Africanism is? They're clueless. But ask them if you know what the Democratic Party is, what the Republican Party is. Even some of them even know what the Communist Party is, or what the Progressive Party is, or the Green Party. What I'm trying to say is, we are completely absent from the debate because of assassination. So how do we change this paradigm? How do we deal with this? Huey B. Newton said that that information is intelligence. The power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in the desired fashion. Once we define the fact that we are in this position primarily because a certain class of black leaders, the Samuel Jackson types in Chango, a certain type of black leader has permitted us and led us down this path. They have led us down this path. We have voted for Obama overwhelmingly, and what have we been told? That if we don't vote for Obama, we have Mitt Romney. He's supposed to scare you. How is a white boy who's a slave master on the plantation going to scare the slave on the plantation? He's already on the plantation. Slave master's running it. What is there to be scared of now? Everybody said, well, if you don't vote for Obama, you got Romney. And Obama has carried out every policy that Romney and Bush would have carried out in Spain. If white folks, if the average white person wasn't so stupid, he would understand that the best thing that happened to him is Barack Obama. They just don't understand. And the irony of it is, they're getting all of this fascism, all of these repressive laws, all of this militarized police state from a black guy. They're getting it from a black guy. A black guy is going to take their guns from them. This is what they're saying. A Muslim, an undercover Muslim. Somebody that wasn't really born here. You know, the birthers, you know. He wasn't born here. He's, you know, I don't think he was born here neither. But that's not the point. The fact of the matter is that the average white guy in the trailer park and in the and on the working stiff believes that Obama is somehow opposed to them. And the average black person believes that Obama is just being presidential. That he really has our interests at heart, he just can't show it. He just can't say nothing about it. He just can't speak on it. But the fact of the matter is that white males still control America. They don't have nothing to worry about. They got a president. And you know they're grooming the next one. And the next one is going, we're going to be told 4 years from now that we should vote for this Hispanic who came from a family of immigrants who spoke at the last Democratic convention. We're going to be told that he's the new face of America and that we got to get behind him in the Democratic Party. And the Republicans going to have a Rubio up there talking about, yeah, you got to get behind it. And that's who we're going to vote for. We're going to get into some coalition politics in a few years. Big time. Big time. And Obama, he's going to be the elder statesman of black American politics to the day he dies. Everybody's going to be beating a path to his door for endorsements, for this and for that. And I want to close with this. He touched on how in the 60s, they bought off. They had this war on poverty. And we had what we call poverty pimps. You know, there was a whole class that evolved, the poverty pimps. These were storefront militants, you know, with the dashiki and the bullet around their neck and the big old afro, you know, and they was on the payroll. You know, they were, you know, this was the war on poverty. This was before the war on crime and before the war on drugs and before the war on, you know, this was one of the first wars. And, when they had this war on poverty, Lyndon Baines Johnson flooded the community. He said, well, they're burning down their community because they don't have no investment in America. So let's give them a piece of America. And they had all these urban renewal programs come in and anti-poverty programs. Obama has just established a similar type of a program where corporations that funded his campaign can begin to fund activists in the community. It's called the Activist Empowerment Program. So the funding that put him in power now is going to pay off all of these guys that supported Obama for the last 4 years. So the Michael Baysdens and all of these idiots that you've been listening to all the time, all of a sudden they're going to have funding for their programs and their projects, and you won't have Jack Doo-Doo. So will it go around in circles? Yes. Obama's doing the same thing that Lyndon Baines Johnson did, and we're sitting here talking about, well, you know, Obama got swagger. And I be telling sisters, I said, well, look, you know, if sisters don't criticize Obama, it's not going to work. Because the average sister thinks that Obama is a catch. Because he's light-skinned, because he has an education, because he's a lawyer, and he has Michelle and the kids at the house. I mean, how could you not love this? Huh? You ain't check out Michelle's politics and who she's relating to. But she's a black queen. She's all of these things. Because what? She's married to Obama and none of us voted for her. Nobody voted for Michelle Obama. They voted for her husband. Okay? But having said that, this is why this man has this devastating support. Sisters will defend him like they were defending their own children. Why? He's a catch. He's successful. And he's successful by the standards of who? Who is he successful by? What standards is he based on? How many black folks go to Harvard Law School? And he's president of the Harvard Law Review. Huh? How many of them are picked by white Jewish professors to continue their education and continue their indoctrination and are put in position to undergo a period of grassroots acclimation? How many? When they brought them, when they tried him out at the Democratic Convention and he gave that speech, the first thing they said, that's the future of the Democratic Party. I remember all of those pundits. Every last one, CNN, Fox, even Fox News, this is the face of the new Democratic Party. This was when he gave his keynote address at the Democratic Convention. Before anybody even knew about Obama. Ain't nobody knew about this Negro before then. Everybody talking about Run Jesse Run. Everybody talking about Run Jesse Run. But we see what happened with that, and we see what happened with his son. We see what happens with the Bobby Rushes. We see what happened with all these poop butt Negroes sitting up in the black caucus right now who have nothing to say about U.S. foreign policy in Africa. Who have nothing to say about mass incarceration in our community. Who have nothing to say about police brutality and police murder in our community. Who have nothing to say about the key issues in our community that are affecting us every day. So I just want to end by saying this. When we look at the assassination of our leaders, we have to understand that these assassinations were meant to push us in a certain direction of thought and social practice and disunity. And it worked. It worked. Today, we have black leaders who can't lead us nowhere. We have more black elected officials than we ever had in our history. And we have less power. We got more mayors than you can shake a stick at. And more police brutality in the communities that they come from. Almost half of the mayors, when they get out of office, are indicted for corruption. Nagel was sitting up in New Orleans talking about they didn't give him the funding to hook up the dikes. And he told them about it. And he warned them about it. Where's Nagel going? His ass is going to jail now as we speak. Jackson, Jesse Jackson Jr., elected back in office. And he ain't even in the street. He's in an insane asylum. He's in therapy. That's like electing a dead man to office. Black folks just voted for him. That's Jesse's son. That them sisters from the church, they just trooped on into the voting and just voted for him. Now, if I was standing out, they said, man, don't vote for this clown. He's an opportunist. Man's wearing Rolexes and chasing women around and wasting your money. Oh, he represents us. He's always been good to us. Every Thanksgiving, we get a turkey. So now we're on the
We are on the eve of destruction of empire, ass out on the eve of destruction. So what are we going to do about it? So I think that out of these types of forums, we have to begin to build a public opinion that assassinations of our leaders were not coincidence. They were not just incidents in history. They were calculated attempts to change our attitude and our ability to organize ourselves around our own interests. And that was the importance of Malcolm. Malcolm clarified things to us in plain language so that we could organize around our own interests. Martin Luther King stood as a moral beacon to a country that had no morality so that we could organize around a new ethic, a new understanding of humanity. And they both were assassinated. And where did the U.S. go? It has went from the Nobel Prize to Martin Luther King, a man of peace and nonviolence, to a Nobel Prize for a warmonger in the White House. So, assassination has worked. The question now is, now that we are all targets, what are we going to do about it? Because now, they're not just talking about assassinating our leaders. They have laws in place to assassinate anybody that disagrees with U.S. policy, that they deem as an enemy of the state. So today, every citizen is a potential terrorist. They're not a potential human being who could contribute to society. Each one of us here is a potential terrorist, and our government could come after you today, snatch you outside that door and drag you away, and nobody will see you again, and there's nothing that you can do. Thanks to a black president. So when Jared says that this is an oxymoron, that you can't mix Obama and Malcolm, tell that to these brothers and sisters who have these t-shirts and sweatshirts on, and they have Elijah Muhammad over here, they have Malcolm X over here. Now, Elijah and Malcolm on the same t-shirt, you know, his chest should be ripped apart. You got Elijah over here, Malcolm over here, Martin down here, Bayard Rustin back here. And you're saying, what kind of shirt is this? If we had that much unity on that he got on that shirt, we'd be free by now. That just goes to show you that Koreans is making our shirts for us. And we buying it because, you know, if it's a name, I got to wear it. Malcolm X is not just our shining prince. Malcolm X represents a turning point in our consciousness. And a turning point in our consciousness that was sidetracked by reactionaries, that was sidetracked by the U.S. government and counterintelligence, and that led to the present consolidation of right-wing power in this country. And that consolidation of right-wing power has placed us outside the parameters of debate against the police state. We no longer talk about self-defense. When was the last time you heard a black man talk about self-defense? Nobody talks about it. Everything's in the context of gun violence. Gun violence in a society that was founded on the gun. Rap Brown, Imam Jamil Al-Amin said that violence is as American as cherry pie. This is a militarized police state. Look at the football game. Look at the baseball game. Military flyover, dedication to our heroes. You got crippled soldiers standing in the middle. What they got to do with a football game? What does a crippled soldier with crutches got to do with a linebacker playing football? Nothing. It's just building up this patriotism and love of the military and love of the police. Well, you know, Christopher Nolan kind of like changed a little bit of that. But my point is we're living in a military society that's violent, that institutionalizes and glorifies violence. And until we come to grips with that reality, gun control only means that you and I need to get a gun. You and I need to know how to use it. We need to organize in our community, and we need to organize legal gun clubs in our community so that we can protect our community in times of crisis. And I just want to end with this. The reason why Stop and Frisk works the way it does, the reason why it's so effective, is because it prohibits our youth from ever owning a weapon. It's not just the job they're keeping them from when they get a record and they go through court. They cannot own a weapon.
And the fear in America, the greatest fear in America, and one of the reasons Malcolm was struck down, the greatest fear in America are black men with guns. Black men who are willing to defend themselves and to defend their rights and the integrity of their community. And that whole debate was killed with Malcolm X and the repression of the Black Panther Party. As Nkechi pointed out, the major focus of the COINTELPRO program was to dissuade black youth from revolutionary consciousness. That they would rather be a Lil Wayne, a P. Diddy, a basketball player, LeBron James. I ain't got nothing against LeBron James. I do got something against LeBron James. But I ain't got nothing against LeBron James. He's a basketball player. But since when has black folks' leaders been sports figures and rap artists? We the only people that got black leaders that are sports figures and rap artists and referees. Everybody else got black leaders that got leaders just politicians. So we need to understand that Malcolm's assassination was calculated, and it came at a crucial time, as all of these brothers and sisters were pointing out, when black people were moving towards decolonization, they were moving towards internationalism, we were creating the type of consensus in the African diaspora that could have led to United States of Africa today. And that whole process was sidetracked. Lumumba was assassinated. Malcolm was assassinated. Nkrumah was overthrown and deposed. Sekou Touré was deposed. Jomo Kenyatta died. Eduardo Mondlane assassinated. Amilcar Cabral assassinated. All these assassinations that occurred by the imperialists and by the Americans were designed to sidetrack and move people's movements to the right and away from national liberation and freedom. And we need to understand that that's what Malcolm was about. That's what the murder of Malcolm was about. His murder was designed to keep you enslaved and unable to think in any other alternative but within the system and within the conventional wisdom. So I just wanted to, I know I took too long, so I guess we're going to have questions. You know, Cynthia. Cynthia, we got to have the sister. You want to have a question, man? What do I do? Hey. Well, actually, I'm going to take your job and